A Gathering of Days, A New England Girl's Journey, 1830 to 1832. A novel by Joan W. Bloss. Chapter 12. Monday, May 30th, 1831. Around us all is fresh new green, new grass, small flowers, new leaf. On such a day, it is hard to recall the recent bogginess underfoot and heavy mud on the roads. This morning we carried down armloads of bedding, Maddie and I at her discretion, to air in the fresh spring sun. Some, not having been used of late, gave us a musty smell. Once she paused, looking out at the hills, and spoke so softly as to make me think I was not meant to hear. Let me remember this thankful moment later, when I've doubts. Certainly, it was a curious thing for a new wife to say. Another time, as she folded a quilt, "Such fine work here, and made for use. May I be proven worthy to carry on the task." Tuesday, May 31st, 1831. Talk started up about the Jews, who had seen him and who had not, and from whence he came. Uncle Jack, who chanced to be there, said it put him in mind of a story, which he then put to father. A man there who knew, who held that Italian was his favorite tongue. In argument with a Bible scholar, the latter preferring the Hebrew language, the former was heard to remark, "You can't deny that when God Almighty thrust poor Adam out of Eden, he spoke Hebrew to him." "They may be," the scholar replied, "but I take it as certainty that if God spake Hebrew when Adam was ejected, Eve was speaking Italian when Adam was seduced." That's funny. Father slapped his knee at this, and as if to recall his pleasure, repeated the final line. Pleased by his story's great success, Uncle Jack chuckled, winked, and said, "And they waste pupils good time these days on the study of Greek." "Please," she said, compressing her lips, "there are children here." She said no more, nor had to. Uncle Jack left soon thereafter, saying that he had, quote unquote, much to do, and firmly refusing our father's entreaties to reconsider and stay. Afterwards, father fussed about, finally bursting forth to say, "You know he meant no offense." Wednesday, June 1, 1831. How different are the dresses she's brought from those of Cassie's mother. Yet freely she pegs on apron around them, puts a shawl atop them when chilled, and goes about as if unconcerned at her odd appearance. Open V's at throat and back, and well-shaped bodices, tightly tucked, were never meant for farm work or the country life. Friday, June 3rd, 1831. Now are we busy from dawn to dusk with things she finds in need of doing, and all our assistance, I think, I think I've not seen Cassie to speak since she and D arrived. The last of the bedding has been brought down, including the quilts my own mother brought when she came as a bride. I worry lest she should inquire why there are only 11 of these instead of the usual dozen. How little we knew when we put it out what was to befall. Within the house we scrub and sweep. Within the house we scrub and speak. You know not, you would not think, that before she came I had cleaned it well. This, it seems, is spring cleaning, and must be done from top to bottom, whether it's 'tis needed or no. Today she enlisted Daniel's help to carry out, and in again, all the furnishings. Some of the pieces are assigned new places. The old planked tables drawn near the hearth. The fashion, she says, in Boston. She intends to hang it with a cloth. She intends to hang it with a cloth and set a lamp in the middle. The dressers being moved to the farther wall, handier to the work of the kitchen, in her estimation. She does the new chair, still does the new chair retain its place, and the settles still by the fire. Last night I sat there next to her while Father read from the Bible, as he so likes to do. Daniel and Maddie had been out of doors, but came inside with darkness. Then, joining together, five voices as one, we easily followed Father in prayer, and so retired to bed. Tuesday, June 7, 1831. Cassie came by this morning to say, I must come and see. They've a grand new mural along the stair, and in the parlor, too. The latter is in the most popular style, but was done in a single day. It shows a hillside and farm and elms. The latter, says Cassie, in tiny leaf, that it must be spring forever. The stenciler showed me a book he had, from which I copied out nearly a page for my future instructions. The stencils are made from metal plates, there being one for every color, and of each parts of the design. The desired effect of landscape or scene is achieved by the muralist through their knowing combination. In this manner, an entire scene may be readily constructed and far more quickly executed than by freehand drawing. From The Curious Arts by one Rufus Porter. Every object must be painted larger or smaller according to the distance at which it is represented. Thus, the proper height of trees in the second distance is 1 to 2 inches, or other objects in proportion. 2 inches, the other objects in proportion. Those in the first distance from 6 to 10 inches generally, but those in the foreground, which are nearest, are frequently painted as large as the walls will admit. The colors also for distant objects, house, ships, etc., must be varied, being mixed with more or less sky blue according to the distance of the object. By these means, the view will apparently recede from the eye and will have a very striking effect. Very striking effect! Indeed, I think I never till will have seen any murals as handsome as these. 'Tis hard to restrain my envy, but I largely succeeded and confessed it not. Wednesday, June 8, 1831. The start of summer school. Of all of our household and the Shipmans, I, Maddie, and Cassie will go. Asa and David will help their father. Willie might go, but that Miss Shipman is reluctant to give up her baby sooner than she must. Daniel, like the other boys, will be working the farm. Father notes this with quiet pride. I never thought before this time he might have minded that he must ever beg after help. Thus, wait until the others were done, to commence his haying. We gladly helped him, Maddie and I, but our strength was insufficient for some shares of the work. At the second house, we were met with exclamations, happy tears, and crying after news. Mary Nelson, Joshua's sister, has gone, we hear, to Tiltonboro for a summer's teaching position. Sophie's uncle, her mother's younger brother, got a foot so badly mangled, they had to cut it off. He's all right now. Maddie this morning was all impatience. And truly, one would not believe that any pupil before this day had studied penmanship. Father gave her a new lead plummet, which he had shaped himself. This implement dangles brightly from a new birch ruler, bought for her by means of a flaxen string. Also from father, a sharpened quill, from her, a pewter inkstand. I think this may have been her own when she was a girl. It bears the marks of frequent use, nor was it any of ours. She promised, too, a new manuscript book, and though we have enough of plain paper at hand, Maddie's copybook is to be bound with patterned paper sent from Boston, but not yet arrived. The new teacher's name is Miss Orpha Williams. She is kind and tiny, hardly taller than I. I fear the larger of the boys, if such should attend the school this summer, will take advantage of her. She was to have come a week ago, but was delayed in arrival. Thus is delayed also the opening day of school. Thursday, June 1831. I heard the clatter as I came up the road, coming home from school. The weavers! I thought, and so it was earlier than in other years. But this was a different weaver than we've had before. She liked his looks, is all she said, and thought he was well spoken. I would rather have waited for the one we knew. The loom set up in the parlor already, and from its opened windows the clatter emanates. He'll make a new coverlet for their bed, the dark blue pattern for the winter months and lighter summer sides. 'Tis a rather old-fashioned pattern, but she prefers it still. Friday, June 10, 1831. What you laughing at, girl? Friday, June 10, 1831. Please? Friday, June 10, 1831. The truth is told about the quilt. It happened in this manner, and Maddie was the cause. With the weaver here these days, there's been considerable talk of linens and bedding, sewing and quilts, quilting designs and their stories. Flying geese, moon over mountains, Star of Bethlehem. She knows a host of them by name, both those she'd made and otherwise, and likes to talk about them. Then you tell the story, says Maddie to me, about the reds from the Russian's coat, and grab the father's trousers. But what can you have in mind? I asked, her words being so outlandish that they caught me unaware. Embarrassed by my answer to her, Maddie now shrilled at me. The Russian's coat, you know it, Kath. And you and Cassie took the quilt and... Maddie! I gasped, too late. Catherine, she queried, drawing thread and smoothing down her stitching. Does the child mean yet another quilt? One I know not of? Until that moment, no lie was asked. As I had reminded Cassie so many months ago. As for the deception itself, I'd long since found the justification in Teacher Holt's well-known remarks and Uncle Jack's opinion. But now I must tell the truth or lie, deny that Cassie and I had done what Maddie had seen us do. I blurted out, 'Twas anyway an old quilt. You wouldn't have liked it at all. Then, red-faced and tearful, I told her it all. The missing book, the message found, our hard-worn decision and the precepts given in school, even Asa's whipping and the stolen shipment pies. Catherine, Catherine, was all she said. Then, I'm so put to the test. She made an attempt to resume the sewing, but only snarled the thread. As for my part, I could not speak, and I remember nothing of Maddie in this while. Come, she said, calm and regained, and led us to the summer kitchen to start the evening meal. Halfway through that work, she exclaimed, "And did you not think on the danger to you? What cruel misfortune might have occurred, harm to you or Cassie?" "No," I said. He was cold, and 'twas winter then." "Dear Cassie," she said, "for you are but a child." Then she advanced as if to embrace me, but as soon withdraw. "Come," she said, and with an effort to be brisk, "I'm afraid we have fallen idle. Run, quick, Maddie, and fetch us some water. Catherine, that fire needs wood. As for the quilt, I must think on it, must search out what to do." Early morning, Saturday, June 11, 1831. Last night I heard them talking, mostly her voice, then father's. They spoke so low, the words were indistinct. Then her laugh rang out. "But Charlie," she said, "it is really so funny. Grab the father's trousers." Then he chuckled, then murmurings, then we were all asleep. Later, Saturday. I am to make a replacing quilt. That she has decided, and our father agreed. When I protested I could do it not, that I knew, hemming, running, and felling, overstitch and buttonhole, but not to make a quilt. She smiled despite the solemn moment and my urgency. "All that should make it easy," she said. "Besides, I am here now to teach you." Then she stretched out a hand to me, whereat I cried, as I'd not done before, nor had I done for months and years. And when at last I looked at her, I saw her own eyes glistened. The end of chapter 12.